Hey everybody, and welcome back to Becky Talks Parks. This is a podcast for passionate parks and recreation professionals who are raising the bar in the field and in their community. Join us as we talk to experts who are making a difference just like you. Parks and Recreation is finally being recognized for what it is, an economic driver and a place for communities to grow and thrive. So if you're ready to hear from the best in the industry and raise the bar in the field, stay tuned. We're going to get this podcast started right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to Becky Talks Parks. I'm excited to have you on this show. Today I have a very special guest, Dr. Teresa Penbrook.
Hi, Becky. How are you today?
I'm good. So this is actually very special for me because you are my boss. And so I think this will be a fun one. It's always been interesting. Like, I wanted to interview you, but now it just seems like the best time for it. We recently did some webinars around working remotely, and they've had a ton of participation. I think we have almost like 900 people signed up to listen to how you and I have adapted to working remotely. And I just felt like I really wanted to get your insights, not only on this topic, but as a leader, as you know, the CEO of GreenPlay, you're so active on GP Red and speaking and teaching. You do so many things. So I really just wanted to have a conversation around how you manage those things. And I think that this kind of conversation will resonate well with those who are trying to adapt to remote working and like having to manage so many new things in their life.
Well, I was thinking about this as we've done our webinars. You know, one of the things that may be a challenge for agencies going forward is that as people get used to creating their own work plan, they're working from home, and we can talk more about that. But as people get used to that, when they have to go back to work set hours, that might be a little bit of a challenge, because one of the things that we find, and you probably recall this from your initial training, is that we do recognize that everybody has their own circadian rhythms, and meaning that some people work best early morning, some people work best in the middle of the day, some people work best late at night. I am not a late night person, so I recognize that for me, if I have to do a difficult task, starting it at 7 or 8 o'clock at night is not gonna be the way to do it. It'll take me at least twice as long. Whereas if it's something, if I go to bed and get a good night's sleep, then I can get up at, sometimes I start at 5 o'clock in the morning and I can crank it out really quickly because my brain is working well. So for me, I organize my time into time blocks where in the morning, I know that's when I'm the most efficient and the most effective. And if I have to do, especially numbers, I try never to do anything with budget numbers after, 1 p.m. after I've had lunch, because I just go into this postprandial lull is what they call that when you're digesting your food. And I just am stupid. I cannot do a budget after, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so knowing the times of day where I can do things has really allowed me to be effective. But I also recognize that we have other staff. We have some staff who do their best work, between 6 p.m. and midnight. And what I always say to people is, I don't care when you work. I mean, obviously, I'm expecting roughly 40 hours a week so that people are committed and set out time blocks, roughly 8 hours a day. But I don't care if those are in the morning or the afternoon. And one of the things that we're seeing right now with a lot of people are being forced to deal with additional family and pet obligations and homeschooling and all those types of things, that it may make sense for people to be able to do their work early in the morning and do their work in the evenings and then spend time with those, the other family members during the middle of the day. A quick example is we have one staff member he's got kids at home. He's got three. And so he gets up at 5 and he works from basically 5 to noon. And then he turns his desktop computer over to his daughter because she has to do her schoolwork. And she didn't have her own computer. So she does her schoolwork from noon to 5. And then he comes back at the end of the day and checks in, does a couple more hours of work after dinner. And so that's working very well for their family, but he had to have permission and basically the creativity to figure out what's going to work most. And I think from a work at home, working remotely standpoint, that's really the crucial part for people to learn. It is hard for people who have been in a system where their hours have been dictated externally for people to suddenly get themselves into a structure that works for them. And in the shift when people, especially with this pandemic, people have had to very, very quickly move into situations where there is no structure or they don't know what the structure should be. And so I think one of the things as a leader, whenever I hire somebody who's shifting into a new structure, is I spend a lot of time talking about kind of the soft stuff. You know, when do you work best? How can I help you set up a work plan and time, blocks of time, call it time blocking, blocks of time that where you can be most effective, you know, between, you know, 2 to 3 hours at a time, and then take a break. And I also heavily stress physical activity and movement. You know, I was a fitness and wellness coordinator way back when, and I firmly believe that we are more effective, both physically and mentally, cognitively, if we do have movement of our bodies during the day. So I encourage people to block out time, you know, whether it's in the morning. And a lot of people are not used to that if they've been working heavy jobs, heavy hours, you know, at recreation centers or on site. And so what I do is say, you know, pick the time of day that works best for you and make sure this is the time to get into that exercise routine so that you can be more effective from home and set up structure. And then if you're working with a family, you know, letting the family know, here's the hours when I will be off and here's the hours when I'm working. I've seen some really, you know, innovative ideas where people have put signs on their office doors, letting the kids know, or the husband or whoever it is. Significant other know that this is the time I'm going to be busy, and that way they know when they can come in and when they can't. So I guess where I'm going with this is just the most important part is helping people realize that they can set up their own structure in order for themselves to be most productive. And really what I care about is that the expectations that their work plan will be achieved. And maybe I'd like to talk a little bit about that now, kind of how we set up work plans.
Right. And I think that goes into, you know, before we get into the actual work plan, is kind of so something that I think a lot of leaders and a lot of managers probably struggle with is that you do want to give your teams the ability to, you know, find the schedule that works for them and you know, work out and manage their physical and mental well-being, as you were mentioning. But I think a lot of it does come down to trust that they will get the work done. So can you talk about kind of how you have allowed yourself to trust, you know, everyone, all of the employees at Greenplay, and then go into some of the work plan?
Yeah, well, I do, in the initial part, right after somebody is hired, and in this situation, if you were transferring an employee from, you know, the workplace into the home, I check in often during the first month or so. And what I'm doing is I'm asking kind of what sound like kind of innocuous questions, how you doing, what's your day like kind of stuff, but I'm checking in to see if people have set up their own structure. And I also set some expectations about certain tasks, helping them come up with a to-do list and a work plan. And then what the trust part builds for me, you know, if we do it for a couple of weeks and somebody just doesn't do what we've talked about, you know, on the first few calls, then I start to get leery. But if somebody is easily accomplishing the tasks that I've asked them to do, and especially you can tell right away the go-getters who are doing more than what you asked them to do. You know, you can give, like for us, we do a lot of education and training. And so if somebody is kind of spending their time going, well, I had some extra time, so I did this, and they tell me about that, then that builds trust instantly. Because I know that they're not just sitting there trying to do the minimum amount that they can do. I mean, we can tell that. Anybody can tell when you've got an employee that is only doing the minimum amount to get by. And for me, those kinds of people, we have a little bit more leeway in the private sector. Those kinds of people don't last with me. If I don't trust somebody, I will very quickly kind of start to ease them out. But that trust does build over the first, you know, at least 3 to 6 months. And the first 3 months are the most crucial where I'm trying to check in. And they may, a lot of times, you know, I'm trying to be a leader and a coach rather than a boss. So I'm trying not to micromanage and say, well, what time did you work today? And what did you do with this? What I'm trying to do is say, well, you know, what were you able to accomplish this week? What things did you have challenges with? Are there things that I can help you with? And so coming in from that leader, kind of that leadership standpoint, I can tell whether or not people are doing, you know, kind of taking their own self-motivation to get things done versus somebody who's just waiting for me to give them the next thing on the list. And, you know, one of the challenges is we have the benefit where we get to hire really high quality, you know, folks. And so I screen for that. I know sometimes I've managed folks at all different levels of organizations, and some of our staff are not necessarily self-motivated and may need more of that structure where we have to really lay out, here's what I want you to do today. And that's okay. I mean, if you know that your work working with a level of employee that needs more guidance or more structure where you have to prescribe what they're doing, as long as you can, you know, and it does take some time, but if you can create a list, and in the beginning, I actually come up with what the list is the first couple of weeks, because, you know, people don't know. It's like, I don't know what to work on. So I don't want to just go, well, work on something. Tell me what your work plan is. They have no idea. So what I will do in the first couple of weeks and months is, like, here's some things that I think you should do. We have actually created a training template where we talk through, here are the things that I'm expecting you to learn, you know, within the first year, or here are the things I'm expecting you to do this month or this week. And by that sort of, you know, giving them guidance and also helping people understand where to find things, you know, especially if people are working from home and don't have full access to all of the things that they had in the office, that can be a real challenge. So how do we work with, you know, our IT folks? We have a strong IT team that makes sure that everybody should be connected at all times to, we have a, you know, a VPN and a server and all that stuff that I know everyone's going through, but making sure that everyone has what they need to be able to go through and get the tools that they need to be self-motivated and to be as effective when, whatever time of day that they can work in the best structure that they have.
Right. I think it's really important that people know what tools and resources are at their disposal. And also, mm-hmm. it's very comforting to know that there will be that training, there will be that support. I know for me that the biweekly calls with you were extremely helpful, and now we move to every month. But I think with, you know, those kinds of one-on-one conversations are very important, not only for, you know, as both to establish trust that yes, we're going to get work done, but also to, you know, confide when there's, you know, work or personal circumstances that are going to be impacting work. You know, for instance, having a baby.
Yeah. Well, and I do think there's a piece in the leadership of remote teams where you have to give permission for people to bring those kind of things to you. Because one of the things is, when you're not just next door, you're not just down the hall, people are hesitant to make something appear to be bigger than it is. So, right. For example, somebody's, you know, dealing with a sick cat, or somebody's dealing, you know, whatever. We all have lives. And so as things come up, what you need to do is be able to make people feel like they can bring that kind of stuff up to you, and you can help them work the structure around that, rather than feeling like, oh, I can't say this because they're going to be mad because it's interfering with work. Yes. You know, and it's that kind of culture. I think we have an opportunity at this point to, and also giving people permission to pick up the phone and, you know, call me, text me. I often start with, since we don't want to be called and texted, you know, every 20 minutes, what I often will tell somebody at the beginning is, if you have questions that need immediate answers, feel free to call or text anytime. If you have questions that, hey, I'd just like to know about this, or I need to learn this thing, then create a place, you know, either on your server or your phone, wherever you want, or a piece of paper, that is a bullet point list of things that we should talk about the next time we talk. And so that, by grouping, you know, a lot of times there's just, especially with people who are new to a situation, helping them group the immediate needs versus the things that can be discussed on our next regularly scheduled call helps them prioritize, but it also helps keep our time, you know, appropriately allocated, so that people are not just calling me for every single little thing when, just because it's top of mind, when it really, they don't need the answer of that today. However, want to make sure that people know at any given time, you need an answer today, call me, text me, I'll call you right back. And right. Shoot me an email. We set up structure about how often you should be checking email, you know, and that's different for every organization, but for us, you know, we need to be responsive. And so it's expected that within, you know, 4 to 8 hours that somebody's going to get back to me on something. And if it's immediate, I send a text. So, and that might be different for other people's organizations, but setting up the hierarchy of contact, you know, when to get in touch. I know some organizations are using things like WeTeams or Microsoft Teams and WeChat and Slack, and there's a whole bunch of technology out there for instantaneous connection. And so, but letting people know, here's how I prefer to be contacted, is really important when you're the leader.
One of the things was that I started GreenPlay back when my son was 7. And so I understand, you know, trying to work from home and being, you know, at that point I was a single mom, I had lots of support, but I also was in a place where I really needed to focus and plan my time around when I was available and when he was available. So one of the things that I did was I set up a space in our house. And so he knew where mommy's office was. And so he also knew, even at 7 or 8, that when I was in there and had the door shut, that it meant that I was not available. And I mean, I never had him alone in the house at that age, of course, but he knew that when I was working, that I was not available, and he needed to schedule time too. So I also set up a space for him, so he understood that he had his place to work. And oftentimes, you know, he would be, I could see him out a window from my office, and I could see that he was sitting at the kitchen table doing his schoolwork while I was working. And so by helping other people in our house understand that we need to have time to work and places to work, it also can help them. And so I think it's really important to have the space set up, and also to have everyone understand that, you know, we're all kind of in this together. And so with, as we go forward, I think it's very, as a family, it's kind of one of those things, if you're working around other people, that is one of the hardest things to do, but it also makes it so that you can know that when you go to your space, that you're ready to go. I also try to get dressed every day, you know, and so I know some people joke, sometimes I do meetings in yoga pants, but I usually try to make sure that I mentally am prepared for the work. And I find by going to my place wherever I'm working, and also by making sure that I'm dressed, I'm much more effective. Now, over time, I've gotten to the point where I have the ability now to block out when I'm in work mode. I can work in an airplane, you know, or on an airport, or at a hotel, or at a library. Libraries are actually great places. You can get study rooms if you're having a hard time home. Now, right now, of course, during the pandemic, libraries are not open, but finding places where you can work if you're having a hard time at home. And I know sometimes it's outside. I mean, if you have cell service or you have wireless outside, that can be a really nice conducive place if you can work and concentrate there.
Right. I think it's important to find a place that really works for you. And, you know, it takes a while to find out what that environment looks like and, you know, where you are most productive. And I think the tips around, you know, communicating with your family and setting those boundaries and, you know, communicating your needs is really important.
Yeah. So, well, I don't mean to be too airy-fairy about this whole thing, but I think sometimes this transition is really creating awareness, and you become much more aware of what you actually you need to do on a daily basis to keep yourself happy, healthy, and productive. And that's when I have a lot of conversations with new staff in helping them really explore that for themselves, because it's different for all of us. And I think that's a big shift. And we'll see cultural shifts. I think this whole pandemic is going to change the way that people work, because people will realize that they are more effective during certain times. Now, it's going to be hard, obviously, you know, if things do go back to normal, whatever that new normal might be, you know, in a few weeks or a few months, no one knows when that time is. It's going to be hard for people to go back to set structured hours once they have had the freedom and the flexibility of being more effective. And I think that's something we need to be aware of too, and think about, well, as we're running organizations. I will tell you that once Greenplay went virtual and we allowed all of our staff to work from wherever they are, at first there were a few people that just did not like it. They missed the structure, they missed the camaraderie of being in the office with everybody. But within a few months, you know, we asked again, okay, how's this going? Should we shift back? And we really had to push back. People said, no, I don't want to. I've learned how to do this now, and I'm more effective not having to make the half hour commute or not having to go in, or the distractions. I mean, there's a lot of research that shows that people are really, in an 8 hour workday in an office, effective maybe 5 hours a day, you know, because you've got so many distractions and so many things coming on. So if you can get people to recognize that working from home, and I do expect an 8 hour workday, you know, on average, but how people can do that in a way that really they're not having that many distractions, it actually can be a higher, more effective, productive workplace.
Right. And I was going to ask, you know, when you first made that shift before it was cool to work remotely, you received some of that pushback, but, you know, from an executive, do you remember that shift for you? And was it difficult for you to manage that?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I started Greenplay on a desktop computer and a fax machine out of my house when my son was 7. So, and I had worked in recreation centers. I'd worked at, you know, centers and moving for park district. And, you know, so I was used to being in the field and working that, you know, at that point I was in, you know, supervising and in management. And so I was working more than 40 hours a week with all the meetings and things. But I remember the shift to telling myself, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to set myself up on schedule. And I didn't have I didn't have people showing me how to do time blocking or work planning. There weren't podcasts like yours all over helping people out at that point in time. I mean, I did read a lot of the business books, and I have a master's in organizational management. So I was trying to follow some of the great leaders and because CEOs don't follow an 8-to-5 time schedule. And so what I would do is read some of the great business greats and try and figure out how they manage their day. And I'm still doing that. When I see a leading figure in whatever industry you want to follow, whoever you admire, I often look at how do they keep themselves happy, healthy, and productive on a daily basis. Because I truly believe, I mean, that's one of the things that we are doing in Parks and Recreation, is we're providing that time for people to build their own space and their own capabilities to be happy, healthy, and productive. And so I want to live that within all of our employees. Also, I think that's very important so that we don't have employees who are burnt out. If somebody is truly, overworking themselves or overwhelmed or taking on too much, or we've got somebody who for whatever reason just does not want to be doing the work that we're doing, I think as leaders, it's our responsibility to help that person, coach them if we can, to get them into either the right job or the right time frame or whatever it is. Sometimes there's a whole lot of stuff that we just can't deal with in the workplace that people are bringing to the organization. And we just have to help them find something that's better for them, a better fit. And I remember in the early years, I used to get a little upset. Every once in a while we'd come across somebody who just was not the right fit. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with them? And then I realized, not everybody's gonna be great at this type of work. And this is a one way. By working remotely, you will truly really see for yourself and for your staff, are they self-motivated? Am I self-motivated? Am I in the right place? And so in some ways it could be a really great sifting mechanism, I guess, as we go forward coming out of this to really feel like, do we have the right people doing the right jobs? And is there a better way to do it?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think a lot of it does come down to self-awareness and realizing what you need. I realized that when I made this switch to GreenPlay that I was very reliant on having that structure, especially when you first make that transition. But then over time, what I've come to appreciate most is that flexibility. And so, I think a lot of times it may be a short-term transition and you need that additional support. But then over time, one of the things that I love so much about this position is being able to work from home. But if you are, I'm also an introvert. So if you really rely off of the energy and feed off of other people, then that might not be, it might be really difficult for you right now during this situation where you have to be quarantined.
Yeah. Although I do think, I have both extrovert and introvert tendencies, and I recognize certain days I'm one way versus the other. And I recognize that with the technology now, through Zoom, especially, we use Zoom as our preferred technology, Becky, because you've helped set it up. But one of the, that actually helps a lot because I set aside time. If I'm having a day where I'm feeling a little bit disconnected, I will actually schedule Zoom time with my family and friends in the evenings.
Right. Well, okay. So that, I think this is a great conversation. I think it's very helpful for people who are just making that switch, but also as, if you are in that executive level position to understand kind of the shifts that you may be going through, maybe you relate to some of what Teresa was saying. And then also just from, if you're an employee or if you've got, your team now is working remotely, that is a big shift. So we wanted to share this information so that you know that there are some difficulties, there are some challenges that come with that, but hopefully you now have some additional tips and some different, different strategies that can help you work through that transition. And so, Teresa, I just want to ask you one of the final things that I want to ask you, which I haven't actually asked a guest in a long time, but I did this for a while, is about, how we raise the bar in Parks and Recreation. And maybe this changes based on the current circumstances, or maybe, you might have a answer that applies regardless of the circumstances, but what do you think it means to really raise the bar in the field of Parks and Rec?
Well, I believe that, especially relevant or relative to the times now, I've for a long time believed that parks and recreation are even more important and more essential the more stressed an individual or a community is. And so we are going through a time of unparalleled stress in our communities, especially all around the world, but especially in the U.S. for us. And in our communities, I think raising the bar has to, you know, our relevance is becoming more important. I think that we will see coming out of this pandemic that people have even a greater expectation and respect for what we do in managing the places and the lands and the programs that allow them to do recreate their own body, minds, and spirits on a daily basis. And so raising the bar for us, I think sometimes we take it for granted what we do. Oh yeah, it's fun. We create sports. We do, you know, play. And those, and we just kind of, I think, almost belittle in our own minds how important we are. And I think that this this current situation is really helping people understand how important the social engagement, the physical activity, you know, the programming and the cognitive development, especially for our young people, the team building, you know, all of the things that we provide through parks, recreation, trails, open space, all of the related ancillary quality of life activities that we manage in our communities are crucial. And I think that raising the bar would be taking pride in that. It would also be making sure that we gather the opinion and the support of the people who are in our communities who are upset. You know, that having playgrounds closed, it may seem like a simple thing to some people, but the reality is what we are seeing is a whole lot of families with children who don't have places to move their bodies. And I think, you know, it's becoming more and more crucial. And I guess I'm, you know, some people say I'm overly optimistic, but I do feel that, you know, this too shall pass. And we will come through this situation, but I think we're going to come out a heck of a lot stronger once we get past the initial, you know, earned revenue, earned income impacts a lot of us are dealing with programs being shut down. But within a few months, we're already seeing it on a lot of our Green Play projects that the people in the community are even more in support of parks and recreation now than they've probably ever been. And I think in part because before they may have taken it for granted. You know, they, oh yeah, it's right there. I don't have to pay attention to it. But now suddenly when they can't do a program, they can't go to the recreation center, they can't use a park, all of a sudden they are going, wow, this is really, really important to me and I miss it and I need it. So I think that's going to be an opportunity to raise the bar as we go forward.
Awesome. I completely agree. And I think you summed that up really well. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was a long time coming, but I'm glad that we finally sat down and did it. So, where do you think, or where can people connect with you?
Well, I'm always open to email. So it's Teresa P, T-E-R-E-S-A-P at greenplayllc.com. That's probably the easiest way to reach me. I'm pretty darn responsive. People are always welcome to go to the website for Greenplay. And I'm also with GP Red, so gpred.org or greenplayllc.com. Both of those organizations I work about, you know, part of my time for each. And you can check out what we're doing, and we'd welcome people who want to get involved. If you, anybody who needs assistance, wants help, wants more information, we're very, very responsive. So I'd love to talk with anybody.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show.